So today we'll be reading from the third canto, chapter 2, text 13. Canto 3 is titled as Remembrance of Lord Krishna. So text 13 goes as follows.
Dharmasu nor batarajasu ye Nirikshya drik swastyayanam trilokah Katsanyena chadyeha gatam vidhatur Arvak sritau kaushalam ityamanyata
The form which Dharma Suno of Maharaj Yudhishthira Bhata, certainly Rajasuya, in the arena of the Rajasuya sacrifice, Niriksha, by observing, Drik, sight, Swastyayanam, pleasing, Triloka, the three worlds, Katsanyena, in sum total, cha, thus, adya, today, iha, within the universe, gatam, surpassed, vidhatu, of the creator Brahma, arvak, recent mankind, sritau, the material world, kausalam, dexterity, iti, thus, amanyata, contemplated. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. All the demigods from the upper, lower and middle universal planetary systems, assembled at the altar of the Rajasuya sacrifice performed by Maharaj Yudhishthira. After seeing the beautiful bodily features of Lord Krishna, they all contemplated that he was the ultimate dexterous creation of Brahma, the creator of human beings. Purport. There was nothing comparable to the bodily features of Lord Krishna when he was present in this world. The most beautiful object in the material world may be compared to the blue lotus flower or the full moon in the sky. But even the lotus flower and the moon were defeated by the beauty of the bodily features of Lord Krishna. And this was certified by the demigods, the most beautiful living creatures in the universe. The demigods thought that Lord Krishna, like themselves, were also created by Lord Brahma. But in fact, Brahma was created by Lord Krishna. It was not within the power of Brahma to create the transcendental beauty of the Supreme Lord. No one is the creator of Krishna. Rather, he is the creator of everyone. As he says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, text 8, Aham Sarvasya Prabho, Mattah Sarvam Pravartate. Om Ajnanatimirandasya, Jnananjana Shalakaya, Chakshur Udmilitam Yena, Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha, Sri Chaitanya Manovishtam, Sthapitam Yena Bhutale, Swayam Rupa Kadamaya.
पंगुं लंगायते गिरिं यत्कृपा तमहं वंदे श्रीगुरु दीनतारिणं वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवतीर्नैष्ठिकी ट्रांसलेशन ऑल द डेमिगॉड्स from the upper, lower and middle universal planetary systems assembled at the altar of the Rajasuya sacrifice performed by Maharaj Yudhishthira. After seeing the beautiful bodily features of Lord Krishna, they all contemplated that he was the ultimate dexterous creation of Brahma, the creator of human beings. So this chapter 2 of Canto 3 is titled as Remembrance of Lord Krishna. Very quick context. Vidura is on pilgrimage. He has left the palace having been insulted by Duryodhan. On the way, as he's going through various places as part of his pilgrimage, he comes to the banks of Yamuna where he meets the great devotee Uddhava. When he meets Uddhava, then Vidura cannot contain himself. So he fires a barrage of questions, question after question. If you see, there are so many questions he asks before Uddhava even starts speaking. So many questions. What are his questions about? He is very eager to know about the welfare of Lord Krishna and his family members. And who are one of the most closest family members of Lord Krishna? The Yadu dynasty. So he starts by inquiring about what's happened to the Yadu dynasty. How are different members of the Yadu dynasty, the residents of Dwarka? He also asks, how is Vasudev? How is Ugrasena? And eventually, he comes to ask, how are the Pandavas? He does not ask about the welfare of Dhritarashtra, because he already knows that Dhritarashtra, having taken that decision to side with his blind son, Duryodhana, he knew that his fate would be no different than disastrous. So he doesn't even ask, he just says, laments on Dhritarashtra's misfortune of not even having accepted the peace proposal of Lord Krishna. So he doesn't ask how is Dhritarashtra, but he inquires about all the other family members. Now as this conversation is going on, suddenly Vidura starts glorifying Lord Krishna. In verse 42, this glorification begins. He says, I am not astonished that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, is wandering in this planet as a mortal man, bewildering the conditioned souls. I am not astonished by that, because Vidura himself was virtually incognito. So he was traveling on pilgrimage and nobody recognized him, who he was. And in that mood, he's saying, I'm not surprised that Lord also, when he's coming as a mortal man, nobody is recognizing him. The common man cannot understand him. Of course, the philosophical understanding of people not understanding Lord Krishna is slightly different than how we would the treatment for Lord for Vidura, because Vidura is a devotee and Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nevertheless, he says, I am not astonished that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not being understood by the common by the conditioned soul, because he is wanting like a common man, just like anyone else. Having said that, the conversation then gradually shifts from the battle to how the Lord descends and why does the Lord descend. So there are many reasons. Paritranaya sadhunam, vinashaya cha, dushkritam and dharma samsthapanarthaya. There are three different reasons which are given. However, here is a conversation between two pure devotees of the Lord. And a pure devotee of the Lord understands that the Lord actually need not come for vinashaya dushkritam. He can do it simply by his free will. He need not come physically to kill anyone. And for dharma samsthapanartha, yes, that is a very important reason, but again, that's not the highest reason. So why does the Lord come? The Lord merely comes for the pleasure of his intimate devotees. So that is the point that is being established in that samvad, in that conversation. So he says that we know that the Lord comes here, has descended here only for the pleasure of the Yadu dynasty members. That is the reason why he has come. Now, as he's asking these questions and making these conversations with Uddhava, Uddhava, again, being a very high-class devotee, again, like last time we discussed, that Uddhava is only second to the gopis in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, in the ladder of devotees, who is the most closest to Krishna. Uddhava is only next to the gopis. So, that's how close he is to Krishna. So, as soon as Uddhava hears the Lord's name, he immediately goes into ecstasy. And when he goes into ecstasy, he is unable to even answer Vidura's questions immediately. It is mentioned that this is because he goes into excessive anxiety at the remembrance of the Lord. This samvad having had happened. So Sukadeva Goswami mentions here that Uddhava was a childhood devotee. Since childhood, he was a pure devotee of Lord Krishna and whose devotion never slackened with age. That is not very common in this material world. We see many times, when the children are children, very nicely they will come to the temple, they will sit very nicely in Bhagavatam class, they will do fancy dress competition and they will sing Narsimha Beta prayers, tell Narsimha, the child will sing very nicely, will do so many things. But the devotional life many times tends to slacken with age. Okay. So that happens. But Uddhava was not that kind of a devotee. His devotional life never slackened with age. So his intensity of devotion was very much the same. So when Vidura asked this question, when he reminded him about Lord Krishna, not that Uddhava ever forgot about Lord Krishna, but now he has met Vidura, another pure devotee. So immediately, Uddhava had to bring his consciousness back from the abode of the Lord to converse with Vidura. Like that. So, Uddhava starts his conversation by saying how unfortunate the planets are, the material planets are, that the denizens of these planets could not identify who is amongst them. Lord Krishna himself is there, but they can't identify that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is in our midst. So how unfortunate is it, he says. And then he says that even more unfortunate are the Yadus, amongst whom Lord Krishna was there every moment, but still the Yadus could only understand him to the extent that he was the Paramatma within everyone's hearts, but they could not understand his Bhagavan feature. So that is even more unfortunate. And then Srila Prabhupada writes that Uddhava himself was feeling the most unfortunate out of all these people. Of course, Uddhava was not unfortunate, but a pure devotee feels unfortunate that he could not serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead to the best extent that he would have wanted to serve. So this, Srila Prabhupada writes, is called as viraha tap, the feeling of separation from Lord Krishna. Sometimes even in this material world, when someone leaves, near and dear ones leave their body, we feel, no, I could have probably served him a little bit more. So you can imagine here how close Uddhava was to Lord Krishna, and when Lord Krishna wound up his pastimes, what is the feeling of Uddhava here? So he felt that he could have served more, and how unfortunate, you know, I am. That's his feeling. He mentions that the Lord now has removed his form from the sight of the conditioned souls. And he had come in his eternal form, which is just suitable for his pastimes. So the Lord's form is perfect, exactly suitable for the mission that he wants to accomplish. So this is the conversation that's happening. These pastimes of Lord Krishna, he's saying, even attract Lord Narayana, who is in Vaikuntha. Especially the two pastimes of Rasa Leela, as well as the Lord's householder life with 16,108 wives. So this pastime is something which even Lord Narayana doesn't perform. So even Lord Narayana is attracted to this pastime. Of course, Lord Narayana is non-different from Lord Krishna. That is tattva. But here we are speaking about ecstasy. The conversation from this stage now moves from the Lord's pastimes or his leela to his roop. So from leela to roop, slowly the conversation is moving like that. Or the Lord's beautiful transcendental form, which is today's verse. All the demigods from the upper, lower and middle university plant systems assembled at the altar of Rajasoya sacrifice performed by Maharaj Yudhishthira. After seeing the beautiful bodily features of Lord Krishna, they all contemplated that he was the ultimate dexterous creation of Brahma, the creator of human beings. So it's talking about his beauty now. Now, in this material world, we see so many great persons who are demonstrating so many super excellent skills and abilities. Somebody may be demonstrating a great ability at sport. For example, if you take Sachin Tendulkar, he is the greatest cricketer, greatest batsman that the world has seen. So many people flock to come and see him. So, at best, people can call him as equivalent of Don Bradman. Or, at best, someone can say that he has perfected the art of cricket. At best, someone can give him that compliment. Perfected the art. 100% perfect cricketer. At best. Or, it is mentioned that when we hear the Gandharvas sing, now I am going to singing from sport. If we hear the Gandharvas sing, I remember that when I was doing my Bhakti Shastri course many years back, so my teacher, His Holiness Bhakti Brihat Bhagavat Maharaj, he was mentioning that even when one hears, if a normal conditioned soul of this material world hears the Gandharvas singing, we will faint. We can't, it's not that we can't stand that music, but we cannot. It's so good, mellifluous, that we will faint. Sometimes even if a great singer sings, or when, you know, Madhava Prabhu also kind of lifts the kirtan, he's a great singer, or Gauravani Prabhu, when they lift the kirtan, then you sometimes feel that, you know, you're going crazy there. But when the Gandharvas sing, we won't even go crazy, we will faint. It is said like that. Okay. So, they can be best, at best, called as the perfection of singing. Similarly, many beautiful apsaras are there. It is said that if a conditioned soul sees an apsara, he will faint. What to speak of writing poetry on the apsara's beauty, he will faint. It's as simple as that. So, these are the damsels of heaven. So, how beautiful these apsaras. So, we can say that they are the limits of beauty. We can give a compliment to the apsara in that way. But no one can be given a compliment saying that this personality is the personification of beauty. That is the highest compliment. Most beautiful is different. Okay? Perfection of beauty, fine. But personification or beauty personified is a different level of compliment that you can give to someone who is beautiful. And this compliment is only reserved for Lord Krishna. That Cupid who attracts everyone himself falls flat when it comes to the beauty of Lord Krishna. Cupid himself faints when he sees the beauty of Lord Krishna. So how beautiful Lord Krishna is. So that is coming out in this chapter. So this position is only reserved for the Lord. Personification of beauty. So Srila Jiva Goswami, whose appearance day is today, he writes in the Sat Sandarbhas, he has written 6 sandarbhas, no? The tattva sandarbha, the bhagavat bhagavat sandarbha, the paramatma sandarbha, the krishna sandarbha, the bhakti sandarbha, and the priti sandarbha. So in his priti sandarbha, Jiva Goswami specifically mentions that the Lord does not need any external ornaments to beautify him. Rather, it is written that his own body is the ornament of all ornaments. So rather than the Lord getting beautified by the ornaments, the ornaments are beautified in their proximity with Lord Krishna. So that is the way that Jiva Goswami mentions about the beauty of Lord Krishna in the Priti Sandarbha. So in this verse, Uddhava is mentioning that in the Rajasuya sacrifice, all the demigods too are captivated by his beauty and they are left to wonder who created him. And to their understanding, the creator is Lord Brahma. Most of the people in the material world think that Brahma is the ultimate creator. So they are thinking that maybe this personality is Lord Brahma's best creation. So coming back to Priti Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami mentions that the spiritual form of the Lord, superficially resembles that of a human. The spiritual form of the Lord superficially resembles that of a human, but actually it is so glorious that even Lord Vishnu yearns to see that form of the Lord constantly. So while the Lord's form as Brajendra Nandanandana Krishna or Shyam Sundar Krishna is, we all know, is the peak of beauty. We cannot say the peak of his beauty because his beauty is, doesn't have a peak. But we can say that it is the peak of beauty. So while those forms of the Lord, Shyam Sundara form of the Lord is the peak of beauty, the beauty of his other Leela incarnations are not too far behind in being beautiful. As Mohini Avatar, for example, the Lord demonstrated such beauty that even the most hardcore asuras, the asuras are highly in the mode of passion. And one of the quality of mode of passion is that the person in mode of passion will not give up his activity for or his goal for anything in this world. Right? We see that in office every day. Right? Person who is, wants to attain something, he will attain that at any cost. Okay? Come anybody in his way. So determined. That's the characteristic of mode of passion. Now, the asuras are in one sense, you know, the perfection of the mode of passion, if you say. Okay? So these asuras who are so determined to have the nectar of immortality, simply by seeing the beauty of Mohini Avatar, you know, she comes and then they surrender the nectar of immortality to her. They say, no, you take it. You know. Srila Prabhupada mentioned they did not even want to displease her, you know, in any manner. Lest Mohini Avatar, you know, may think that, oh, you know, so selfish. Even so much of displeasure. Now, what is the reason? Not that the asuras are pure devotees. Okay. It is simply the beauty of a woman. So Mohini Avatar, the Lord came and even, you know, changed the hearts of these, changed the determination, rather, of these asuras to take the transcendental. So more than immortality, her beauty was such that they just wanted to please her. So that is the beauty in Mohini form also. Now, not to speak of, you know, the asuras, even Lord Shiva, whose wife, whose consort, Parvati, is considered the most beautiful woman in material creation. The moment Lord Shiva saw Mohini Murti, immediately he, in front of his wife, he ran away. He left her just like that. And then he ran behind Mohini Avatar. And the Lord took him. You know, so many places the Lord took him. In front of the sages also, who are meditating on Lord Shiva. And then it is said that so beautiful was the Lord that Lord Shiva was discharging semen all along the way. That is, he was chasing. So this is how beautiful the Lord can be even in other incarnations, you know, not to speak of Shamsundar incarnation. So this is Mohini Avatar. Now, we spoke about the beauty of the Lord, Shamsundara, we spoke about Mohini Avatar. But again, the Lord is not too far behind in his beauty, even in his other male incarnations. One incarnation being the Vamana Avatar, whose appearance day is today. So, it is mentioned that originally, as Vamana, the Lord appeared in the four-handed form. Now, very briefly, why did the Vamana Avatar appear? It is because the Asuras, after drinking the nectar of immortality, the demigods drank the nectar of immortality, they became more powerful than the Asuras, so the demigods defeated the Asuras. However, over a period of time, the Asuras pleased their spiritual masters, the descendants of Bhrigu Muni, all the Brahmanas. Bali Maharaj served his spiritual masters so well that the power that he got by serving his spiritual masters was much more than the nectar of immortality. Again, there are some lessons to be derived there, that the blessings of a Brahmana are more powerful than any material nectar that one can get. No nectar, material nectar, can actually give you immortality, because there is no concept of immortality in this material world. It can at best give you a prolonged life. But the blessings Bali Maharaj receives, and by that the Asuras become much more powerful than the demigods who have had the nectar of immortality, and using that power they usurp the heavenly planets, and the demigods have to leave their own abode. Now when the demigods leave their own abode, their mother Aditi, she is very morose. And then when Kashyapa Muni returns, then she tells Kashyapa Muni, look, I want my children back now. So Kashyapa Muni says, you worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. Whatever desires you may have, you worship him and everything will be auspicious. So she performs what with that sacrifice, out of his own mercy, then he appears in the womb of Aditi. Now it is mentioned that the Lord Vamanadev, when he appeared in the womb of Aditi, he appeared in the four-handed form. Usually Vamanadev, immediately our idea is that yes, two-handed Brahmana boy. But originally the Lord appeared in the four-handed form. So again, the beauty of Vamana incarnation is also mentioned in the first few verses of the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Especially in the 18th verse, it is mentioned that the Lord appeared with Shankha, Chakra, Gada and Padma. He had yellow garments. His eyes were like the blooming lotus flower. And he had a sacred thread around his neck and an uncommonly beautiful garland around him, around his bosom, with a swarm of bees around him. So it's a very beautiful description of Vamana Avatar which is given there. It is mentioned that the beauty of the Vamana form of the Lord vanquished the darkness that had pervaded Prajapati Kashyapa's house. So Shamsundara form, Mohini form, 400 Vamana form, all are beautiful. Very nice descriptions are given. Now suddenly it is mentioned, like a theatrical actor who changes his appearance just like that for the next scene, the Lord from the 400 form assumes the form of a Brahmana dwarf, which is the again called as the Vaman avatar of the Lord, and takes the form of a Brahmachari. Now even as a Brahmachari, it is mentioned, his beauty surpassed the entire assembly of great saintly Brahmacharis. So he was the most beautiful of all Brahmacharis. And as he was approaching the sacrificial arena of Bali to take the three steps of land from him, as he was approaching, it is mentioned that the descendants of the Bhrigu dynasty, who were just about to perform the yajnas, saw his beauty and thought as if the sun was rising. His beauty is compared to the rising sun. So much they were convinced that they actually thought that Lord Vamanadev was none other than the sun god who is coming to bless the sacrifice. Or some people thought in that assembly that he could be the fire god, or some others thought that he could be the brahmachari of brahmacharis, who is Sanat Kumar. So these were the different views in the assembly of the asuras who were assembled to do that yagya. So that such was the beauty of the Lord. And it is mentioned in the 8th canto that the Lord's brilliant effulgence of Vamanadeva diminished the combined brilliance of all the priests who were assembled there, as well as the effulgence of their disciples. So much so that when they saw Lord Vamanadeva there in his effulgence, instantaneously they got up and paid obeisances to him, though they were from the other side, Asura side. So such is the beauty of the Lord, that he is able to attract everyone. That is why the famous Atmarama verse, Atmaramas Chamunayo, Nirgranti, Api Urukrame, Kurvanti, Ahaitokim Bhaktim, Itham Bhuta Gudohari. The Lord can attract everyone, even the most conditioned soul. There is nobody who the Lord cannot attract. And again, the beauty of the Lord in his Brahmana form now, not in the 400 form, in the 200 Brahmana form, is also mentioned. And there is an elaborate description of is given of how the Lord was dressed, with a belt of straw, a sacred thread, upper garment made of deer skin, and matted locks of hair. So very nice description is given in the 8th canto. Now, in his Vamana incarnation, the Lord teaches us several valuable lessons. So now we are going from the beauty of the Lord, which was the theme of today's verse, to discuss a little bit more about Vamana incarnation, because today is the appearance day of Lord Vamana. So some key 7 or 8 instructions that I could gather going through this particular section. It's only the key ones that that I could remember that I'm sharing now. There are many more, but which I would have missed. So if I'm missing anything, please feel free to add. The first thing that strikes one when one studies this particular section of Srimad Bhagavatam is that the Lord is asking only 3 pieces of land. He could have asked anything, but he asks only 3 pieces of land. So Srila Prabhupada writes that the Lord is teaching us by his example that a Brahmana must take charity or accept charity only to the extent that he actually needs, nothing more. Because if a Brahmana takes more charity than what is required, then he can be subject to sinful reactions. One can get entangled in sinful activity. So that is one key lesson that comes out from the Vamanadeva pastime. The second lesson is when Bali Maharaj tells the Lord, when the Lord asks for 3 pieces of land, Bali Maharaj is actually telling the Lord, "Oh dear Brahmana, you don't seem to be very prudent. So you're just asking for this. I can give you so many things, and you're just asking for 3 pieces of land. Not very prudent." So the Lord responds, and this is my favorite verse in this section. The Lord responds by saying that for one whose senses are not controlled, one will never be content even if he gets the entirety of the 3 worlds. One will never be satisfied with any material possessions till one's senses are controlled. So that is a very big lesson that comes out from this chapter. The third lesson, the Lord again mentions that one must be satisfied by whatever one achieves by previous destiny. One must be satisfied. For discontent can never bring happiness. So it is our responsibility. We are responsible for our happiness. We cannot put the responsibility of our happiness on people around us. Otherwise, we'll never be happy, because then our happiness is not in our control. So the Lord is saying that only a satisfied soul is fit for liberation. That is why that one of the verses which talks about one who has completely exhausted one's material desires. Which is that, Koparnishwar, remember? Only one who has completely exhausted one's material desires. Akinchana? Pardon? Yeah. Atma, yeah. So only a person who has completely exhausted one's material desires can be fit for liberation. Not a person whose mind is again more and more hankering for these material desires. So that's again a big lesson that comes from this section. Now, through the pastime of Shukracharya, the Lord teaches us that if a guru is teaching us disservice to Lord Krishna, then such a guru must be immediately rejected, no matter what convincing logic that guru puts for disservice to Lord Krishna. So if you see in this section, so many arguments Shukracharya is putting. First he says that hey, this Brahmana, he will take everything away from you, you will be left with nothing. So think twice. Shukracharya is telling Bali Maharaj, don't offer him this three steps of land. Then he says that not only will he take everything from you, but he will take everything from you in two steps. So you will anyway fall short of your promise to give him three steps of land. And because you fall short of your promise, you will go to hell. Because if you don't fulfill your promise to a Brahmana, you will go to the hellish planets. Then he says, charity, he quotes from various Vedic scriptures. He says, charity must not be given at the cost of endangering one's own livelihood. First one must take care of himself and then one must give charity. This is another third logic he is giving. And then he says so many things, but some of the key things. He says a promise anyway is not truthful till you have said Om before that. Because you didn't say Om before that, therefore you are not committed. You are not bound to your promise. So all this tark vitark, all this logic he is giving. And he says there are many conditions when actually falsity is not condemned. So falsity is acceptable, under a set of circumstances. So he says, for example, when you want to flatter a woman, the guru is telling the disciple, when you want to flatter a woman to bring her under your control, then you can, tell lies. Oh, you're looking like Queen Elizabeth. No, not Queen Elizabeth, whatever. Queen of whatever. Or when you're joking, then falsity is acceptable. In a marriage ceremony, falsity is acceptable. Okay. My son is the best son that you can ever get, for your daughter. Or my daughter is the most beautiful, that your son can ever get. So it's acceptable. Falsity. Then he says, if one is in danger, then one can get away with falsity. To save one's life like that. Or earning one's livelihood. So all these arguments Shukracharya is putting. But all these arguments can be rejected and have to be rejected if they come in the way of service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's a big lesson from this section. The sixth lesson that we get is through Bali Maharaj's counter arguments to Shukracharya's instructions. He says that the Lord, so from Bali Maharaj's arguments we understand that the Lord is teaching us that one should not fear hell, one should not fear poverty, one should not fear fall down, one should not fear death more than one should fear that one is cheated a Brahmana. So cheating a Brahmana is the highest fear that any of us should have. No other fear should be higher than that. That's one lesson from Bali Maharaj's example and his arguments. Bali Maharaj also says that at the end of the day, reputation is more important than wealth. Especially, reputation is very important for people who are in positions of authority. It's not reputation which comes out of the desire for material reputation. That's not what he's meaning here. He's saying, yes, we have to conduct ourselves in such a way because whatever great men do, other people follow. When the top man is leading by example, then that inspires everyone else to do so. So therefore, reputation in that sense is very important. So reputation or leading by example is more important than just being wealthy. So what kind of reputation will I have if I don't give charity to this Brahmana? What kind of an example I am setting? And he says, by serving Lord Vishnu, and this is the most beautiful part, by serving this Lord Vishnu, I can never be at a loss, he says. This is 8.20.13. It's a very beautiful verse. He says that either the Lord would kill me in a fight. Only two outcomes can happen. either the Lord will kill me in this fight, Bali Maharaj says, or he would lie down having been killed by me. Or the Lord would lie down having been killed by me. Now, does Bali Maharaj think that he can kill Lord Vishnu? Obviously not. So, what is he meaning by that? He says that either the Lord can kill me anyway, which is not difficult to understand, because the Lord can kill everyone. No one can kill the Lord. But when he says that the Lord will lie down having killed by me, means that by my surrender, I can capture the Lord and he will lie in my heart. That's what he means. Prabhupada writes a very beautiful purport there. So, this is another lesson which comes from Lord Vamanadeva's pastime. And then, when the Lord takes his first step, we know that he covers the upper planetary systems. And with the second step, he covers Brahmaloka. Again, the connection to his beauty, Lord Vamanadeva's beauty comes. It is mentioned that Brahmaloka is so beautiful, but when Vamanadeva's toenails reached Brahmaloka and pierced the realms of the material cosmos, the beauty of his toenails diminished the effulgence of that Brahmaloka. So that is how beauty, even his toenails are so beautiful. So that is another point which comes. And finally, when Lord arrests Bali Maharaj for failing to fulfill his promise, he arrests Bali Maharaj finally for failing to fulfill his promise, but gives him Sutala Loka. Because he failed to fulfill his promise, he has to go down to the lower planetary systems. But then again, the Lord gave him Sutala Loka. It is mentioned that Sutala Loka is much more opulent than the heavenly planets. If we read the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we will understand that there are heavenly planets both above as well as below. It's not that below everything is hellish planets. They are called as heavenly planets which are above are called as Divya Swarga, and the heavenly planets which are below, the subterranean heavenly planets, they are called as Bila Swarga. So it is mentioned that the Bila Swarga, lower planetary systems, lower heavenly planetary systems, the subterranean heavenly planetary systems are much higher in opulence than the upper ones. But however, what is lacking there is piety. In the upper planetary systems, at least you have a chance, you will not forget Lord Krishna. Right? In the lower planetary system, there is only opulence, you know, like that. So Bali Maharaj is relegated there. In one sense, we can understand he is relegated there, but it's not that Bali Maharaj has fallen down. It's a reward for his surrender. Why? Because he has no chance of forgetting the Lord even in those subterranean and heavenly planets, because the Lord says, I'll accompany you and become your doorman. Not only that, my disc will always protect you from all dangers. And what is the greatest danger? The danger of forgetting the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he is having opulence plus having the assurance that he will not forget Lord Krishna. And that opulence is higher than Indra's gates. So that is the power of surrendering to the Lord. So many nice rewards that the Lord is giving him. But most important reward that Bali Maharaj gets, which he himself says, is that the Lord bestows his love in Bali Maharaj's heart. Unalloyed loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So many lessons come from the Vamana incarnation. So I would have liked to end today, but I'll just take 3 more minutes or 5 more minutes with your permission, because it is Srila Jiva Goswami's appearance day today also. So just Anil Prabhu, do I have the permission to for another 5 minutes? Thank you. So today today is the appearance day of yet another Mahajan, Srila Jiva Goswami Pad. So Srila Jiva Goswami Pad is amongst the 6 Goswamis of Vrindavan. So Srila Jiva Goswami was born in 1511 AD at Ramakeli. He was the affectionate nephew of Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Sanatan Goswami. Now, Srila Jiva Goswami was very fortunate right from his childhood, in the sense that when he was a very small child, he already had darshan of Lord Chaitanya when he was a baby. And when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw Srila Jiva Goswami, Lord Chaitanya predicted that this personality will be a very big scholar. In fact, he will be one of the future best scholars in the Gaudiya Vaishnava lineage. Now, even as a child, Srila Jiva Goswami after having seen Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he could not take Lord Chaitanya from his heart even for a moment. So constantly, even as a child, Srila Jiva Goswami would be meditating on Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu all the time. Even when his father left the house and then went along with Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami, and when he was staying alone with his mother, constantly Jiva Goswami used to be engaged in deity worship. He had Ramakrishna deities at that time, it is mentioned, and he used to be engaged in deity worship. Even the games that Srila Jiva Goswami used to play, pretty much like Prahlad Maharaj, was all on Lord Krishna's pastimes. No mundane games. So, very elevated even since his birth. He started studying under the local pandits. And very soon, it is mentioned that he became very proficient in grammar, poetry and rhetoric. All three aspects. When his father left this planet, he took this as an opportunity and left home. And that is when he met Lord Nityananda. And he met Lord Nityananda at Navadvip. And then he started traveling with Lord Nityananda to various places. And by the instruction, by the personal instruction of Lord Nityananda, he then went to Kashi, where he met his teacher, Srila Madhusudan Vachaspati, who was himself a disciple of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And under Madhusudan Vachaspati, Srila Jiva Goswami studied Vedanta philosophy. From there, he went to Vrindavan, where he again got reunited with Srila Jiva Goswami and Srila Sanatan Goswami. And then from Vedanta, he now studied the Srimad Bhagavatam directly under these two personalities. After getting initiation from Rupa Goswami, Srila Jiva Goswami engaged in service of Sri Sri Radha Damodar deities. And then Srila Rupa Goswami, seeing his exalted devotion to the Lord, instructed him to study the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which he himself had compiled. Now, so scholarly was he that not only did he study the book, but he also wrote his own commentary on the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which is called as Durgama Sangamani. So good he was with philosophy, Srila Jiva Goswami. Not only that, he wrote several commentaries on so many books that Srila Jiva Goswami, Rupa Goswami has written and Sanatana Goswami has written. So he has written commentaries on almost all these books. Not only that, but he offered lot of Vapu Seva to Srila Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami. Not only was he writing their commentaries and learning from them, but so much of physical personal service to them. Like for example, Srila Jiva Goswami used to bring the bathing water every day for Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami. He used to massage their bodies and he also used to cook for them. There are so many services which are mentioned that he used to do. So a lot of Vapu Seva. Now after the disappearance of Srila Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, the whole responsibility came on Jiva Goswami to continue the momentum that Srila Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami had established in terms of the preaching. And he did it with aplomb. It is mentioned that once while Srila Jiva Goswami traveled to Agra to debate with the Rajput kings, there was a debate that was going on. Is Ganga more famous or is Yamuna higher than Ganga? No? That was a debate. So Srila Jiva Goswami went there and established that what could be greater? That water which washes or rests at the lotus feet of the Lord, or that water which is a consort of the Lord, which can be greater? So by that argument, he established that Yamuna was superior to Ganga Devi. Now, great acharyas, as I said, that he had to continue the momentum which Srila Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami had laid in preaching, especially that their desire was that throughout Bengal, the preaching movement has to go. Continue. So it was Srila Jiva Goswami under who great acharyas, the next lineage like Srila Narottam Das Thakur, Srila Srinivas Arya Acharya and Dukhi Krishna Das, Shamanand Pandit, they all studied under Jiva Goswami. And this led to preaching all over Bengal at that time. So there is an immense contribution of Srila Jiva Goswami in Gaudiya Vaishnava Jeevan and in our lives. So he composed so many literatures, and he also gave a commentary on the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is called as Laghu Vaishnav Toshani. So much contribution to literature. Srila Jiva Goswami disappeared, left this world, and reunited with Lord Krishna's pastimes in 1618 in Vrindavan. It is mentioned that in Krishna Leela, he serves Lord Krishna in the role of Vilasa Manjari. Vilasa Manjari, it is mentioned, is one of the closest servants of Rupa Manjari, closest sakhis and servants of Rupa Manjari in Krishna Leela. So, we try to read something about Srila Jiva Goswami given his appearance day. So, it's a good opportunity for us to seek his blessings so we may all progress in our spiritual life. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.